Welcome to episode 7 of Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. This is a monthly podcast bringing you information about awesome books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as the Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. How many people will you kill to live forever? Imagine a world where soldiers regenerate and continue fighting without pause, where suicide bombers live to strike again and again. This is the dream of Richard Ridley, founder of Manifold Genetics, and he has discovered the key to eternal life, an ancient artifact buried beneath a Greek-inscribed stone in the Peruvian desert. When Manifold steals the artifact and abducts archaeologist Dr. George Pierce, United States Special Forces Delta Operator Jack Sigler, Callside King, and his chess team, Queen, Knight, Rook, Bishop, and their handler, Deep Blue, give chase. Formed under special order from President Duncan, they are the best of America's special forces, tasked with anti-terrorism missions that take them around the world against any threat, ancient, modern, and at times, inhuman. With cutting-edge weapons, tough-as-nails tactics, and keen intellects, they stand alone on the brink, facing the world's most dangerous threats. Ridley's plan to create unstoppable soldiers has just made him threat number one. Tension soars along with the body count as the team faces high-tech security forces, hordes of regens, the horrific results of Manafort's experiments, and a resurrected mythological predator complete with regenerative abilities, seven heads, and a savage appetite. The chess team races to save Pierce and stop Manifold before they change the face of genetics and human history forever. Heart-pounding action combines with adrenaline-charged suspense in the first of Jeremy Robinson's Smart, Sharp series. Today's Reader's Advisory is Pulse by Jeremy Robinson. This action-packed techno-thriller combines science fiction and military adventure. The suspenseful plot takes the readers to Peru to investigate gruesome medical experimentation in the search for nefarious immortality. Fast-paced and full of carnage, Pulse brings together mythology, technology, and action. Readers may also enjoy The Ghost Brigades by John Scalzi. The Ghost Brigades are the special forces of the Colonial Defense Forces, elite troops created from the DNA of the dead and turned into the perfect soldiers for the CDF's toughest operations. They're young, they're fast and strong, and they're totally without normal human qualms. Or, Vulcan's Forge by Jack DeBrule. A nuclear bomb strikes at the fiery heart of Earth, and spewing molten lava, a volcano rises with unnatural speed from the ocean floor. It continues in hot spots around the globe, Hawaii, Washington, D.C., and the Far East. Geologist Philip Mercer is the first to unravel the secrets of Vulcan's Forge. Or, The Lost City of Z by David Gran. In 1925, the legendary British explorer Percy Fawcett ventured into the Amazon jungle in search of a fabled civilization. He never returned. Over the years, countless perished trying to find evidence of his party and the place he called the Lost City of Z. In this masterpiece of narrative nonfiction, journalist David Gran interweaves the spellbinding stories of Fawcett's quest for Z and his own journey into the deadly jungle as he unravels the greatest exploration mystery of the 20th century. Bonus segment, my personal favorite Goodreads list Pulse is on, is Monstrous Biology. Happy reading, readers!
Today's library tidbit comes to us from Mr. Joe over in the Children's Department. Today's tidbit is about geology and fossils. One way that scientists date rocks and fossils is using stratigraphy. Stratigraphy is a branch of geology that focuses on the study of rock layers. There are two main subsets of stratigraphy: lithostratigraphy and biostratigraphy. In today's tidbit, we are going to focus on biostratigraphy. Biostratigraphy is used to give relative ages of fossils and rock layers using what are known as index fossils, meaning that other fossils found in the same layer as an index fossil are assumed to be around the same age as that index fossil. To be useful in stratigraphy, index fossils should be independent of their environment, geographically widespread, have rapid evolution, abundant or easy to find, easy to preserve, and easy to identify. A fossil can be formed in different ways. Permineralization is where mineral-rich water invades a buried organism, and all the empty space in that organism is replaced with minerals. Casts and molds are where an organism leaves behind an imprint or a portion of itself. Replacement and recrystallization is where the tissue of an organism is replaced by minerals. These are rather simplified definitions, and the list is not exhaustive. Check out Dewey Decimal Number 560 for more information. If you've ever looked at the side of a cliff, you may have noticed that it appears almost horizontally striped. This is the result of layers of differing sediment being built up over the years. Outside of a cataclysmic event, such as an earthquake or a man-made event, the farther down into the earth you dig, the older the layers of the sediment get. This is called the principle of superposition. When scientists do run into a layer that has cut across established layers, the principle of cross-cutting relationship is used. That principle states that any layer that cross-cuts must have formed after the horizontal layers and therefore must be younger. Stratigraphy is the study of these layers. Biostratigraphy is a sub-study that believes in the relative dating of these layers using the fossil record. The relative geological timescale was developed as a result of this science. You may recognize part of it by the names of Paleozoic, Mesozoic, and Cenozoic. Now, we are going to do a little experiment. This experiment is a quick way to show relative dating by recreating fossils and then excavating them from a sediment sample. Your list of supplies will be in the show notes, so pause now to grab everything you need. Ready? All right. Take your paper cup, pour a small amount of baking soda into the bottom. Add a small black bead and a small red bead. Pour in a small amount of colored water, whichever color you want, but just enough to wet the baking soda. Push down on the baking soda really hard using the second paper cup and your fingers. This simulates the pressure needed to create a fossil. Add another small black bead and pour in enough baking soda to cover the bead. Pour in another small amount of water, making sure to use a different color each time. Then press down hard again. Keep going, making sure that in every layer you add at least one black and one or more colored beads as you go, until you run out of beads or you have filled your cup. Make sure to press down really hard in between layers. Once you are ready, carefully rip away the paper cup. What you should be left with is a colorfully striped sediment sample. Those different layers represent different strata or sediment layers. The farther down the sample, the older the layer. Place the sample into a deep dish. Make a quick drawing of your sample, making sure to color your drawing just like you see it. Can you see any beads from the outside? Make a note of which layer that bead is in on your drawing. Once you have it drawn, take a very small amount of vinegar and coat the top layer evenly. You should start to see the layers dissolve. As the beads are revealed, make a note on your diagram of which color layer the beads were found in. Add small amounts of vinegar as needed, but take your time. Remember, science is methodical, which sometimes means having to be patient to get results. When you have dissolved the sample into a rainbow of bubbles and have finished noting on your drawing what beads were in which layers, look at your drawing and see if you can find any index fossil beads. What beads show up in many layers? What beads only showed up in a few layers? From what you've heard in today's tidbit, can you spot the index fossils? We hope you enjoyed our science experiment. And thanks, Joe, for the fun tidbit.
And now it's time for Book Traveler with Victor.
Hola, mi nombre es Victor y en esta edición de Viajero de Libros les voy a hablar sobre uno de los libros más famosos de Paulo Coelho, El Alquimista. A continuación les voy a dar una breve sinopsis. El Alquimista es sin duda una de las obras más importantes y conocidas del escritor brasileño Paulo Coelho. Entre los temas principales de la novela se destaca el desarrollo y el crecimiento personal. La novela narra la historia de un joven pastor llamado Santiago, que quiere perseguir sus sueños. Al principio de la novela, el joven tiene un negocio de ovejas con las que viajaba a todas partes, y gracias a las cuales obtenía el dinero con el que podía vivir. Pero poco a poco empieza a crecer en el protagonista la ambición y el deseo de viajar y conocer nuevos lugares. Ocurre que el joven pastor experimenta un mismo sueño varias veces y para interpretarlo recurre a una adivina y más tarde a un sabio. Llega a la conclusión de que el sueño le decía que su tesoro se encontraba en las pirámides de Egipto y pues así el joven decide vender sus ovejas, dejar todo atrás y partir hacia el nuevo continente en busca de su tesoro. Durante su viaje por el norte de África, se encuentra con algunos contratiempos. Sufre un robo por parte de un hombre que le ofreció su ayuda y tiene que ganar dinero para regresar a España trabajando en una tienda de vídeos. Pero decidió mejor ir en busca de su leyenda personal. Viaja a Egipto y ahí conoce a un inglés que dice ser un estudiante de alquimia, el cual sueña con convertir el metal en oro. Además, le enseña a Santiago el lenguaje del desierto o el lenguaje del mundo. Continúa su viaje y se encuentra con batallas de clanes en el desierto, se enamora de una joven llamada Fátima y conoce a un verdadero alquimista, hasta que finalmente encuentra su tesoro y realiza su leyenda personal. Ahora les voy a hablar sobre mi opinión personal. Lamentablemente, El Alquimista no ha podido satisfacer mis expectativas. Las ideas principales de la novela están bien, los sueños por realizar y la búsqueda de nuestra propia leyenda personal, pero en ningún momento he conseguido conectar con el protagonista, y menos con el estilo de narrar del autor, que me ha decepcionado mucho. Será porque tenía las expectativas más o menos altas, pero salvo que algunas frases sueltas a lo largo de la novela, no me ha conmovido ni en lo más mínimo. De hecho, encontré su narración un poco sobrevalorada, por no decir mucho. Por otra parte, la historia se hace predecible a más no poder y hasta cansa. Hay momentos en los que llegué a interesarme por completo por lo que iba a pasar, pero fueron muy escasos esos momentos. Los personajes, salvo quizás el rey y el propio alquimista, carecen por completo de personalidad y carisma. Son tan sumamente planos que aburren. Además, la gran mayoría no aporta nada a la historia. Aún así, y vuelvo a repetirlo, se hace muy predecible todo, absolutamente todo. Y la idea del amor, de ese amor que se nos presenta en el libro, es lo más penoso que he leído en mucho tiempo. Queda presentado de una manera tan ridícula que da risa. Esta novela de Paulo Coelho me ha decepcionado por completo. Una historia sencilla, hasta demasiado, un protagonista con el que se puede conectar con facilidad, pero que me ha parecido insustancial e insignificante. Y un estilo que deja muchísimo que desear. Un libro que, en mi opinión, carece de la calidad que se nos hace creer por su fama. Pero a pesar de esto, a pesar de que no me gustó el libro, y espero que esta reseña no ofenda a nadie, o se deje influenciar por una sola opinión, en su conjunto es una novela que ya sea por el motivo que sea, le gusta al público en general. Lo bueno de la novela es su sencillez, que gustará a un público menos exigente y una moraleja, la de no rendirse jamás, pues cuando una persona desea realmente algo, el universo entero conspira para que esto se cumpla. Es todo por hoy, hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Adiós.
Thanks, Victor, for that book review, and check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Here are some upcoming library events to keep track of. November 2nd, free cycle drop-off at 10 a.m. in the Jenkins Wing. November 3rd, free cycle at 9 a.m. in the Jenkins Wing. November 5th, walking in their footsteps at 6 p.m. in the local history room. November 6th, e-magazines anywhere you go, learn RB Digital at 3 p.m. in Jenkins Room A. November 7th, chapter chat at 6 p.m. at the Evermore Cafe. November 15th, show your creative side at 2:30 in the Teen Room. November 17th, our Quaker ancestors, their history, and the records they left at 11:15 a.m. in the Jenkins Wing. November 17th, the marriage of the waters, the Erie Canal, and the opening of the Midwest at 1:15 p.m. in the Jenkins Wing. November 20th, getting started with LinkedIn at 6 p.m. in the Computer Lab. November 26th, Issues That Matter, Suicide Prevention, Book Discussion, and Resources at 6 p.m. in Jenkins Room C. November 29th, Winter is Coming at 2:30 p.m. in the Teen Room. Remember, everyone, the library will be closed on November 12th for Staff Development Day and on November 22nd and 23rd for Thanksgiving. Have a great month, everyone. We'll talk to you again soon.